You guys still there?
Yes.
Okay. I can't hear anybody but you, Steve.
We're live now.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, Jules.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak, Chairman of the Public Service Commission, and we are gathered the 12th floor of the Capitol for a work session on Grand Forks Bean Company insolvency GE-15-36. Joining us is Commissioner Brian Kalk on the phone, and a number of staff people and Commissioner Chrisman. So we'll just go around the room and identify ourselves first.
Randy Chrisman, Commissioner.
John Hsu, Commission Staff.
Alana Jeffcoat-Sacco, Commission Staff.
Tim Erdman, Grain Warehouse Inspector.
Sue Richter, Commission Staff.
Casey Fury, Commission Staff.
Okay. I don't have any opening comments. I don't know if you do, Brian, but we'll kick it over to Randy here. The purpose of the meeting was just to discuss the outside legal counsel that we want to hire for this case. And there's been some research done by staff and some recommendations, and so I guess I'll turn it over to Randy and you can proceed how you would like on this issue.
Okay, thanks. Just for an update, you know, this issue kind of erupted over at Grand Forks Bean in November-December time frame of last year. Right now, we're just ending the time frame for people to submit additional claims. I don't believe there have been any additional claims that we weren't aware of a long time ago that have come in, but there is still, I don't remember the date, but a week from next Tuesday, so about a week and a half left of that time frame for people to submit claims. There has been some, apparently, maybe some information that's a little different than what we knew before, but bottom line is that's coming up. We're right in the middle of a whole new renewal cycle for licensing. And if you recall, you know, we changed the bonding levels. It's being divided down. Some of these are going to 2-year renewal cycle instead of 1 year. And so our staff is really overwhelmed with this new transition right now. As well as the fact that, you know, these hearings are going to be, I presume, when there are court hearings, it's probably going to be over in the northeast corner of the state, a long ways out of the way. I think this is an ideal case to contract out and retain an outside counsel on it. Staff has looked into some people who have this type of background and who might be willing and have a recommendation. So I'll just turn it over to either Sue or Alana or whoever wants to discuss it with us. But that's the status of it.
Can I ask one question before staff interjects? So you mentioned time restraints and the location as being the driving factors for the need for outside counsel. I thought we were looking for expertise in this area. So I just want to make sure I understand what we're needing so that I don't push for some, you know, expertise area or whatever that isn't needed. I'm just curious about that.
Well, for me, the time constraints is really the
biggest
deal.
One.
And I will also add, you know, this to these producers who are out money, and in this case, there is going to be some money, we believe, to return. It'll depend, the amount will kind of depend on who has credit sale contracts versus cash sales, but there is money to be returned, and so those people are waiting for, and, you know, I don't think they really think of the fact closely that, well, we had to advertise and provide this time frame and that. They're wondering probably why they don't have their money yet, and we're just kind of getting into it. But so, you know, I think that the timing is the biggest driving factor for me wanting to retain outside counsel. But then when we choose outside counsel, that's when, to me, you know, someone that has some background or expertise would be of some importance. But if they're here and interested and willing to learn, I don't think it's necessarily all that complicated. Okay. That someone else can't learn it either.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Commissioner Christman is correct. I mean, timing is important, but so is getting the attorney that will be able to handle the case, because we do know that it's going to, you know, we anticipate that it is going to be a real cat fight for the funds, who's going to end up with them.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did is we called different attorneys that we are aware of, or that somebody had recommended to us that might have experience in the type of litigation that we are looking for. And that list that we put together, there was actually more attorneys that we'd called, but these are the ones that we visited with, specifically these 246 attorneys, and then we narrowed it down to two that we thought would be really good candidates. And Mike Gust, who's in the eastern part of the state, because he is in Grand Forks, and his rate was $250 an hour. I mean, he's in Fargo. His rate is $250 an hour. And then Mitch Armstrong, who would be here in Bismarck, his rate is $190. And I think either one of them would be really good. Part of the reason for making the recommendation for Mitch is because, assuming that this is not going to be the last insolvency that will be in front of the commission, Mike Gust, traditionally in past insolvencies, has not been available because he has been representing farmers. So even though he could represent us here, we thought it would really be a benefit if we could get retain an attorney that maybe would not only be available to help us in this insolvency, but in potential future insolvencies. So that's how we arrived at who we did, and I think either one would be good. One thing that would be really nice about working with Mitch is that it's not that we can't call Mike Gust on the phone, but sometimes it's nice just to sit down, and you got all the papers in front of you, and you have the discussions, and Mitch could run up here real easily, or we could run down there real easy to have discussions, and so that would, I mean, if the commission is comfortable, that is who, again, staff is recommending.
Tell me a little bit about their expertise and how they differ or are similar between those two attorneys.
Well, I don't know if I know everything that either one of them does.
Mm-hmm. Well, as it relates to this,
yeah,
I guess.
As I understand it. And Mike has represented not just farmers, but one, he represented Falkirk. So
An elevator, yes.
Also. So we know that Mike Gust and his firm have represented a lot of different types of stakeholders in insolvencies in the past for many years. Mitch, on the other hand, has not represented anybody that I know of in an insolvency, us or anybody else. But I'm very comfortable with Mitch's civil litigation experience because I've seen it in other areas. He's represented us in a different type of case, a contract dispute. But again, he may not have done an AML contract dispute, but he had related experience that he could translate very easily and handle it very well. The other part that I see as an advantage is that he is very well-versed in this whole concept of the commission, the three-member body, the state government, so that those kinds of issues he doesn't have a learning curve at all on those kinds of issues, and those have come into play quite a bit. You know, you get a settlement offer or something, and yes, we have to have a meeting and get it noticed and all of that. So there's no, you know, not so much of a learning curve there. Either one is certainly very capable of handling it. Mitch did, I did talk to him on the phone a little bit for a little bit more information. He has not been a banking, an attorney dealing with banks. He has been dealing with insurance, you know, insurance companies in his civil litigation, not banks. But he said, you know, he's done hundreds of cases. So he might say he has limited experience, but there's different definitions of the word limited. And mm-hmm. I would say I have limited civil litigation experience from doing a few insolvencies and a few other directly in civil court cases. I think Mitch has quite a bit of very good civil, I have seen it play out, and it is a very quick study as far as, like he said, every case you get is a new case, and you have to start with the law and the facts, and you learn your way through it. So I don't have any qualms about his learning curve there, and I do think it would be an advantage to have somebody trained in. He was interested in doing one previously, but didn't have time. Mm-hmm. So Either one. We would be, I think Sue and I would be comfortable with either one. There's a little difference in price. There's difference in location, but that has benefits and drawbacks. So we can't really say that one overrides the other, I don't think. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Sue, but that's where I come down.
I would agree. I mean, I was comfortable with Mike when I first visited with him, and I'm perfectly comfortable with Mitch mm-hmm. also.
If we are going to outsource, so to speak, all of the work, including like getting those notices out and serving documents and all of that, which we have tended not to do in any division here, I'm not sure why, it just hasn't been a tradition. You know, the proximity might be a little bit beneficial in case we're taking things down or bringing stuff up or whatever. But I do think it's really a good idea to do that. We need to do it in this case because of time issues. But I think if we got used to doing that, that would help a lot because it would help support staff here too, and whether that's public utilities or grain or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I think I saw in Mitch's schedule that he had a lower rate for an assistant. I don't recall seeing that mm-hmm. for Mike. Is that just because he didn't tell us what it was? Mike have the same?
I think he did. They both gave
the
us.
The assistant for Mike Gust is $195 an hour.
Oh, okay.
And Mitch's was $150 an hour for his assistant
okay.
associate.
And I would assume some of those things you mentioned would be billed at a lower rate for.
Yes. And maybe lower. I mean, I don't know how they bill for like the actual support staff of getting out affidavits and things. Mitch did say that, of course, Brian Schmidt would be assisting him. Brian has some business expertise. I think he's got an MBA. So, and Brian has been a real asset too. We didn't put his name down, but Mitch mm-hmm. is, you know, trying to train in Brian to be able to handle his work. So,
one thing that I didn't mention that Mike brought,
just so Brian can hear.
One thing I didn't mention that Mike brought to my attention is that the Buttrell Law Office, Lowell Buttrell, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that name or not, that they are representing two of the farmers that are claimants in a case regarding modified seed or generic seed or something like that. I don't remember exactly. But Mike gave the attorney a call that represents those two farmers and said that he doesn't have a problem. The only thing he would do is ask his farmers to sign a waiver saying that they were totally on board with it. So
they have, Sue, and I didn't think of this till now, do they have a contract with grain dealers? Does Mike's firm have a contract or any or a retainer or whatever with the Grain Dealers Association?
I can't answer that without visiting with Mike on that. I know that they occasionally do some work for them, but I don't know if it's under a continuous contact or a issue-by-issue basis.
One other question I had. Do we have a sense for how many hours this will be?
Wow. Man, that I think it would be hard. I would not be comfortable putting a time limit on it because I think it just depends on every issue that comes up, whether it's known to us today or whether it's not known to us today. I mean, we've been aware that the bank, of course, is claiming a lien, you know, a first priority lien to the grain. And they've been saying that since before we were even appointed trustee, but we became aware just this week that some of the documents that we have received previously from our claimants, that there are some discrepancies between what we got from the elevator and some of the documents that we just got on late Monday evening. So potentially we could have more discrepancies in documents, and the more discrepancies you have, the more items you have that have to be fleshed out. So, man, I don't know.
I want to throw this kind of is out of order maybe for the where we're at in the discussion, but just in case we need to get Josh in here, is there any doubt that if we retain outside counsel and have them do the work that this would come out of our litigation fund as opposed to our operating?
You'd have to ask Josh.
I talked to Josh about that.
I assumed it
he
was
said
the same.
Litigation fund.
Yeah.
It would be similar to the way it worked for John Jensen, I would assume.
Yeah.
So that's not a factor then that we don't have to worry about.
Yeah, the operating fund dollars. Exactly, yeah. It's still, though, I'm conscious of the fact that when you're, sometimes it feels like when you're hiring outside counsel that it's like a blank check for, you know, as long as it goes on. I mean, and it's unusual. It's different than most other contractors. There's some bids or, you know, and I understand it's different in the legal world, but it just, there's, makes me more nervous in signing up for.
Those are different types of cases, though, too, than like a siting case that you have outside counsel on is not going on forever.
Because right. If the commission was more comfortable in a prior insolvency when we retained outside counsel, we did actually, the commission set a limit and we made that limit known to that attorney. And then when we got to the point of, you know, getting through most of those funds, we had to go back and evaluate the case and decide if we needed to come up with additional funds for that attorney to move forward or if our on-staff attorney could handle it. So we could do something like that if the commission would prefer, if you'd be comfortable.
If we did something like that, do you have a ballpark idea of what you would throw out as a cap?
I guess I hadn't really thought about it, to be honest with you. I had not
thought
about the hours and...
It's theoretically a great idea, but it's almost impossible. We had those in the reclamation cases.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't say you can only work up to $25,000, but...
And you'd have to grab a decent figure. I mean,
yeah.
I think 25, I believe, is what we used, but we had retained somebody that was charging, 10, 12 years ago. I think they were probably down at $150 an hour somewhere.
I don't even remember that
case. You know, noticeably less, so.
You know, your insolvency is, whichever lawyer you have, this is their mission. Or his or her mission. Your insolvency is a process that you are doing as trustee. And you have to do that as best you can, and then you have to defend it as best you can. And I can't see you ever making a decision that you wouldn't take an appeal or whatever you had to do to defend the integrity of what you did as trustee. And I can't see you cutting short your analysis of figuring out the answer of what the trustee thinks should be done. I mean, it's your obligation under statute. And so, I mean, I'm really not here to make money for lawyers. I'm just not. But it's an impossibility to think that we could cap it. Now, the coming back to doing in-house counsel is always conceivable. But if you are in litigation, you want that, if you're in the middle of litigation when you reach this cap, you want that attorney that knows how to do that to be finishing it. And as you witnessed the other day over in Mandan, if you go on appeal, you really, unless there's some major problem, you want that attorney that knows that case inside out to be on that appeal. So I don't have a huge, I don't really think either one of them is going to spend for the sake of spending.
And I'm not suggesting that. I just want to be responsible with our money and make sure that we're asking questions ahead of time. And I've also seen in hiring, and this is not a reflection on these two fellows, but in hiring other outside legal counsel, say maybe even out-of-state folks, where we're getting bills for work that, you know, we didn't necessarily even ask for or wasn't approved ahead of time on some of the, on the rail side where it's, you know, I just want to know what the checks and balances are on the billing.
And what I wanted to start off saying is I am familiar with some of those issues, and they are a different type of case where you can kind of, you know, you can write a longer brief or a shorter brief. You do want to win the case, but there's even ranges of how much you do to win a case. And so they are a little bit different than the insolvency. There's pretty much most of the work is what you have to do, period.
Right.
You know, or you're not.
And I want to emphasize, I'm not familiar with Mike Gust. I'm sure he does great work. I've worked a lot with Mitch. I have a lot of respect for Mitch. And this is more a reflection of me saying to myself the last time I felt like I hadn't asked enough questions, I'm going to ask more questions next time. So that's why I'm asking these questions.
Well, and I don't know if it makes a difference, not that you want them to spend more because it's you're not going to be reimbursed, but the commission has a right to be reimbursed from the fund. So anything that they spend can come back to us from the trust fund, assuming that that there is enough money available. So you can end the indemnity fund if it ends up being credit sale or both. You split it up. So we could reimburse our fund if, you know, for whatever the resources are that come out to whatever money is available. to the degree it's available.
I think another thing that hasn't really been discussed but is a factor in going to outside counsel on this, this is kind of different than the cases we've had in the not quite 2.5 years that I've been here, in that at least on what we know, and all the filings aren't necessarily in, but they seem to be. There's nothing been coming in lately. It would appear that if you made the presumption that these were all cash sales, there's enough money in the trust fund to pay them off. If they were all credit sales, of course, then it wouldn't matter. It would just come out of the indemnity fund. But then, of course, the producers would be getting less because it only pays 80%. But if they were the bank, they're the lenders, are probably looking at trust funds available after we're done paying people off. So I think this is a case where there's a very high likelihood of litigation after we make our decision, because between the lenders and the producers, you've got very opposite desires, I would say. So I think this is a likely case for more litigation.
I agree, and not only that, but we have to keep in mind that, should something unforeseen, some decision that we have never seen be made in the past, that there's a potential to mess up our whole insolvency process, how it works and what is available to the growers when there is a failure as far as the trust proceeds go. So, I mean, there are some very serious dynamics that can come into play here, because, I mean, we've got to have a very good case so that we get the right decision.
I don't have any other questions. I'm comfortable with your guys' recommendation. And I don't know, Brian, do you have any questions or thoughts, ideas, concerns? Brian, are you still there?
The light was off a minute ago, Steve, but I see it's back on.
Yep, still here. Sorry about that. I had to remember to take the mute off. And to think I testified in front of the Senate Energy Committee and you couldn't even push the darn button. Anyway, here's the thoughts that I would have. Is the fact that we're not 100% sure if the other guy has a conflict of interest or not. The fact that Mitch is in town. I like going with Mitch. I know him. He does a good job. He keeps his cost in the right amount. I mean, I'll defer with what you and Randy decide, but if you're asking my thought, I'm more comfortable with Mitch than the other fellow.
And Mitch was your guys' recommendation, and I'm comfortable with that as well.
Is this the kind of thing that would the commission make a decision on this, or just defer to staff to go ahead and do this, or do we need to have a meeting and vote on it, or what?
You don't need to vote on it now. I mean, you had your meeting to discuss and give us our direction, but I will proceed to get a special assistant, AG appointment for him. That has to be first. They go case by case. We just don't need those in siting, because in siting we have a generic one, but then it would come to the commission for a motion, and so that will be a motion where you say we want to use this person, and that's the basis for paying him.
I do have one kind of qualifying thing in all this, in coming to an arrangement with whoever you choose. I don't want this to be seen by any attorney as kind of a side thing that they squeeze in when they have time between their other really important cases. To me, this is a really big priority that this get resolved as quickly as possible, because those producers, this has already been dragging on way too long, and we're not even to the end of the time frame for turning in claims. So it's got to be clear to them that when we get to a week from Tuesday, we're looking for some information that guides us and or prepares a sample report and recommendation for us to look at and take action on in a pretty quick time frame.
I will certainly pass that on. I know you and I talked, though, before that there might, and we'll get to this again when it's time, there might be some merit in having the parties produce their positions on the contracts before we write the report so we know what they are. I talked to Mitch about this as a possibility, too, as opposed to after. It doesn't have to take a lot more time, but it might reduce the element of surprise after, because when you'd go to that hearing, technically speaking, they don't have to tell you their objections until 10 days before, and then all of a sudden you have 10 days, including weekends, to prepare for perhaps, you know, 10 objections. And so it is nice to have it ahead of time. So we did talk about that might be the first step before the writing of the report.
And I'm fine with, you know, really whatever strategy you all as the experts come up with. I just don't want to wait till July to determine that, well, we're going to ask them to do something before we make a move, or, you know.
I'm looking at the commission meeting schedule because I'm assuming there's some things that we would be voting on. The deadline is the 26th. Is that the deadline?
Yes. Last day to file a claim is the 26th.
So we have a commission meeting the 27th, and then the next meeting is 3 weeks later. There's a three-week gap. So I don't know if you want to just keep that in mind, or we can have special meetings or whatever, but just it's not a typical two-week cycle, just that particular time. And Alana leaves for town shortly thereafter.
And depending on if something is filed on that last day, Tim has to have a chance to review it, and we may be going back to them and asking for additional information. So that can all take, you know what I mean, depending on the claim. Because, like I said, we have questions on some of the documents that we have.
But us retaining an attorney doesn't even have to wait until after the claim deadline. We could do that at a special meeting next week if the appointment were done.
It only waits on the appointment, right?
Okay. And can't we go ahead with the appointment, and can he start working and make the commission's motion at the commission meeting be effective?
We can do that when we absolutely have to.
Okay.
I try not to do it if I don't have to. I also make sure I at least wait till the Attorney General's office tells me there's no issues here.
Okay.
I might be waiting on the Attorney General to get back to sign something, but I'm not waiting on a substantive issue because I am not comfortable doing anything before that point in time. But they are also agreeable at that point to
that seems
making a different effective date.
Okay. I think we've kind of covered all the relevant issues. Anything more from your perspective, Brian? Give him a minute to hit the mute button. Brian, your silence is deafening.
I'm good. Everything looks good to me.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else have anything?
I do not.
Okay. Thank you guys for putting this all together and working
Thank
through
you.
It.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. All right. That concludes the work session on, what is today's, on case number GE15-36. Thank you.